lost to ignorance and confusion, three men arose from humble beginnings with a message of wisdom and hope for their troubled times. Three men who would eventually change the very face of humanity.
But they were not the droids we're looking for. So, here are some other guys.
It's Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil.
And good evening. Welcome to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil. Thank you. Phil's pointing at me. I got it. I'm on. Yeah.
You're on.
Episode
you're on,
number 197.
Woo-hoo.
The show
Woo-hoo.
With songwriters talking to other songwriters about the craft of
songwriting.
Thank you. And we have brand new songwriters. We have established oldie veterans. We all get together, and hopefully everybody gets a little better at writing songs, including our guest tonight, Andy. Well, we'll get to him in a minute. You can always find us here live in this little studio with the red curtains at 7 o'clock Tuesdays, CJRU 1280 AM Toronto. Or if you can't get to the radio, just go on the live stream. That's songtalk.ca.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm your host, Bruce Harrett. Hi.
Hi.
And joining me tonight, as always, the intrepid, unperturbable, I don't know what they are, but they're members of the Song Talk Radio Action Team, Mr. Neil Modi.
I'm quite perturbed by that label.
Okay. Yeah. And Phil Emery.
I'm preserved by that label.
Preserved?
And also bravely handling our social media onslaught, Vanessa Vreeland over here. She's waving. And we have Anthony on the board tonight. Wave, Anthony. Wave
what
at
up?
The camera.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Anthony's here. During the show, you can join the proverbial conversation. Just send your comments and questions to @SongTalkRadio on Twitter, and we're going to share them with our audience in real time, not fake time.
That's right.
Real time. And please stop by the website at songtalk.ca. You know what you can find there, Neil?
Everything.
No, the lyrics to the songs that Andy's
right.
going to play
that's
tonight.
That's pretty handy.
Yeah. So if you're listening to the show on live stream, just go to our website and click on the homepage, and there you'll find the lyrics to the two songs. You can follow along, follow the bouncing ball.
Yeah, it's not offensive.
Well, make your own bouncing ball. There isn't one really there. But also you can find on our website how you might become a guest on the show. Our guest tonight is Black Suit Devil, also known as Andy Dureggio.
Hi.
Is that right? Dureggio.
Durego, yeah.
Durego.
Durego.
It's not Italian. It's Portuguese. Okay. Durego. Andy close Durego. Enough. And he also goes by the project name of Black Suit Devil, a seductive blend of acoustic soul with thought-provoking lyrics and heartfelt soulful melodies. I agree. Mm-hmm. Andy Durego has been a regular in Toronto's rock, blues, and metal music scenes for over 20 years. He doesn't look 45, does he?
No.
No, because he started when he was 13,
yeah.
apparently. And he's been performing all around North America. Cool. He's just released his debut record, The Freedom Sessions. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Thanks for being here.
So I'm curious, where in North America have you played?
It's been Canada. Like, I've done some shows down in the U.S., but it's because of legalities and whatnot.
Oh,
it's just been,
criminal record.
Kind of no, I mean, like on
a There's a lot of red tape.
Financial. A lot of red tape involved with going down south. So, just predominantly in Canada.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like we're how far? Vancouver.
Vancouver. I'm actually going to do a 3-week tour out there in March. But I've played there before. I just got back from an East Coast tour, a 19-date East Coast tour, right after the album launch party for the Freedom Sessions.
Wow.
And then, various parts around Ontario.
So did you build up a following before you recorded?
No, I was just kind of, just started playing shows and building my songs. And when I felt that they were ready, when I had a batch of about 10 songs ready to go, I hit the studio and started laying down some
tracks. Did you keep any fans from like when you were in a metal band? Because you're not in metal anymore.
Some, but yeah. not many. I mean, it's a whole different ball game,
yeah.
I guess.
It's more shocking than when Bob Dylan picked up the electric guitar.
Yeah. And I distanced myself from the scene for a while and was doing, I was fronting a psychedelic blues rock band prior to this called the Blues Emergency.
Mm-hmm.
So I spent a good 3 years doing that and then kind of dove into this.
So were you earning your living as a musician for the past few years?
No, I was predominantly a construction worker for most of my adult life.
Mm-hmm.
It's been like a recent kind of venture, but yeah.
So you can kind of do some contracts on construction, then go tour and come back and get a job?
Or? I've completely distanced myself from the whole industry.
Yeah, I noticed. That, you don't have any work boots, you know, steel toes.
No work boots on today.
Oh, okay.
No steel tips today? Okay.
So when did you write your first song? Do you remember what age you were?
It was, you know what, about 8 months into playing the guitar. Mm-hmm. I noticed I just had a lot more interest in trying to come up with my own kind of songs as opposed to learning other people's.
What age were you when you started the guitar?
I was around 13 years old there. Okay. And just started playing some, you know, basic chords, and then had a little makeshift studio with my grandmother's old little recorder, and just you know, there was nothing spectacular, but I would
was a cassette tape recorder?
Yeah, cassette tape recorder. Mm-hmm. She used to actually use it to, oddly enough, she would write do voice recordings and send it back to Portugal to my relatives as just kind of like, you know, speak to them as though they were in the room, I guess.
That's
as
nice.
Opposed to writing, you know, a letter. And
do you remember your first song?
The very first one,
early. What was it about?
It was oddly enough about a man whose wife cheated on him. But yeah, it was kind of odd. But
you were precocious.
It had a very Bare Naked Ladies type of sound to it, mm-hmm. and it just, you know, just kind of storytelling, and that's kind of what came out. Why at that age, I have no idea. Mm. But yeah, that was That was my first kind of dabble into songwriting, I guess.
Now, you actually, you worked a lot in metal initially.
Yes.
So, let's talk. Did you write any kind of metal?
Yeah, I did quite a bit. In a band called Trails Occur and An Ocean. And my very first band that I formed, Population Zero, which was kind of all my original stuff, pretty much based off of Black Sabbath riff off.
No, cool.
That kind of riffs. But, you know, at the time I was still learning how to play and whatnot, and just, you know, wanted to get out there, and a couple of buddies, we put together a band, and that was, I guess, you know, the first stepping stones into the band life.
So does the metal sort of influence your stuff now? Because your stuff now is very different.
It does. It does. More so the newer songs that I haven't laid down. I'm starting to dig into that sound a little bit. And actually, on the next record, I plan to incorporate some electric guitars into it, which I didn't do on the first record.
You're going to do any drop D?
Not sure if I'm going to that extent yet, but there are some kind of, I call it dirty blues kind of riffs, kind of like something along the lines of a Black Keys would do, kind of in terms of guitar tone.
How about lyrically? Because I know, like, metal music often lyrically is not the sort of stuff you're writing now.
Well, a lot of it does hit a political type of kind of fight the man, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up listening to bands like Slayer and Megadeth, and a lot of these songwriting topics were based on things going on around the world, whether it be everything from wars to politics, you name it. So,
what's the biggest mistake people make about metal, do you think?
I think it gets lumped into a lot of, like, kind of negative, satanic kind of, you know,
and metal's off really, really broad. I mean, it's like saying rock.
There's so many subcategories and whatnot, but it all tends to, again, throughout the mainstream media, it gets lumped into, you know, paints a very negative picture. But a lot of times, they're speaking the truth, and perhaps the powers that be don't want that message.
What makes it metal, though? I've never understood. Like, what's the difference between punk and metal? Like, punk was really loud with three chords.
Metal's loud,
short
too.
Songs.
We were actually talking about this before the show. I think punk is usually a little bit loose because, in general, a lot of the musicians are maybe not quite as polished. Usually with metal, there's usually a fairly complicated and sophisticated musical background to it.
Yeah.
Very often, rhythmically, is very complicated. The guitar playing is very polished. There's lots of shredding, which is you know, really, literally fine guitar playing.
And also harmonically, like the Devil's chords, like the diminished and the augmented, and those chords that don't typically get used in pop and rock, they get used.
The demented seventh?
The demented seventh, that sort of stuff. That's really dissonant sort of sounding. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, you're right.
Yeah. So let's ask Andy, since he played it for years, so what do you see as the difference musically and lyrically? Metal?
You know what? It's everything we pretty much touched upon. It's very kind of, you know, technically proficient, I guess, more so than like a punk genre and whatnot, but it still conveys that same attitude. And
it's loud, though.
And heavy.
Yeah, definitely loud.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I went to hear some death metal down on Spadina. Remember that? I don't know if you were there that night. There was a bunch of people playing, and it was really loud. But I thought, that man who's the lead singer is going to lose his voice very soon, because it was screamy. And did you lose your voice at any time, or were you trained to be able to do it?
I actually never sang in the metal bands. I was predominantly a rhythm guitar player and sometimes a lead guitar player, but for the most part.
But they were playing your songs.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, someone else was singing them.
At the time, I didn't have the confidence to be a singer. I'd do some backup vocals, and over time, people were like, oh, you know, you should try your hand at singing. And my first kind of venture into singing was I was fronting a Stone Temple Pilots tribute band for about a year and a half, and that kind of gained my confidence and I dropped a guitar, which was the first time in all my years of playing like in bands that I was a part of a band where I didn't play an instrument, just focused on being the front man, and that gained my confidence. And then
that'll do it.
And then eventually coming across Ray LaMontagne really kind of opened up my eyes to what I wanted to do musically, and I was singing in the style that, you know, that I sing now in this project, but didn't have confidence in it. And then hearing Ray LaMontagne, kind of, you know, I was thinking, if he can do it, then I can do it. I always thought my voice was a little odd and different, but you know, hearing him.
Who's Ray when he's at home?
Sorry?
Where is he? I don't know.
He is based at I can't remember what state he was from, but he's from the U.S.
Yeah. He's a recording artist.
Yeah, he's a recording artist for, I guess, a good 12 to 15 years now. He's probably on his sixth record, if I'm not mistaken.
Like, you're sort of adapting your style based on what he was doing? Like,
not based on him, but when I heard him, I'm like, you know what? I kind of sound like him, and it gave me that kind of boost and confidence kind of go in that direction. And because at the time, I just didn't know what I wanted to do and just didn't have that...
But he inspired you when you heard him.
He definitely was.
Because he had an unusual voice.
I can relate to his song, like the songs that I was working on at the time kind of mirrored a lot of things that he was doing too. Mm-hmm. So it kind of, it gave me that little boost.
Speaking of songs, would you play one for us now?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And you're going to play Blind Man.
This is Blind Man, yeah.
Okay, great. So here's Andy Durego with Blind Man.
Yeah.
away. It takes what he wants. It's the power he craves. One by one, surrender and obey. Or be branded in the name. So one power controls everything. You're entrapped, you're enslaved. Tell me, Father,
That was Andy DiRego with Blind Man. Very cool song.
Very atmospheric.
Yes, yeah. A very simple chord structure. You're playing mostly A minor and G, weren't you?
Yeah, very simple.
And what did you go to on your bridge? A minor F?
I couldn't even tell you, to be honest. I don't read music. When I write, I just... come up with what I'm hearing and you know chords that
but you know the key signature, don't you? Or that doesn't matter so much.
I'm horrible with key. I'll be completely honest. Mm-hmm. A lot of times I'm jamming with individuals or they'll play on my track and they're like, "What song is the key in?" And I'll joke to them, but I'm being honest. I'm like, you know, when you find out, let me know because I'm just. I never took lessons. All kind of self-taught and just played from the heart, so to speak, I guess, if you want to call it that. And
right. Did you notice, Phil, that it's made in A minor and G with
certainly you went to a bridge and there was kind of a...
So play the A minor first, your fourth chord.
Let me just grab my pick here.
Because there was a variation in the bridge, which I thought was quite nice.
Yeah, play your first chord. Oh, that, yeah. That's a G, A minor.
I'm
the hammer.
Down a half step. Though.
Yeah. Oh, yep.
And then I guess the G is standard.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of mesmerizing because it's just flipping from the A minor to the G.
There's different durations during the verse and the chorus.
So small little change in the bridge, right?
Yeah, got an F going there.
Minor. Back to you're always returning back to that minor.
There was something in the bridge that you did that was kind of a variation.
Way up
I got a little. That was the guitar break.
Kind of locked down like that.
That was a big guitar break in the middle there.
Yeah, that was very nice.
Oh, so
very
would you call that guitar break kind of a bridgey thing, or is this actually the bridgey thing down here?
I guess I don't know. Kind of an interlude, kind of bridge,
interlude.
Kind of part.
I liked it. I mean, the thing is, I wrote a song with two chords, A minor and G. I was trying to write a Leonard Cohen song, and I really loved the song. And then when I was playing it, I was playing it here, and they said, "Why don't you try an E minor there instead of the A minor?" It was like, whoa, that really helped, right? Yeah. So what's the song about?
The song is about, I guess, corporate control around the world, and, you know, and...
a bit of war in here, too, isn't it?
Yeah, a little bit of war, and you know, it all comes
just
kind of intertwined.
And harm in general.
Injustice, so to speak, overall. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, you know, the strangling grip of you know, a handful of corporations that kind of control our everyday kind of needs as, you know, as humanity. And, you know, growing up and being, like, living in this time when, you know, more and more is kind of strangleholded. On a global level, I guess. And
so it's kind of a metal theme in terms of talking about
it
current
is,
affairs.
Lyrically in a lot of ways,
And I like the fact that the very end of the lyric bridge, for you following along on the website there, "I get so tired of seeing all this wrong. I get so tired of living in this world. Tell me, Father, tell me, where's the love? That's the only place there's hope." Right there is that. Where's the love? I was like, And what I would do if I was rewriting this with you, I would take a break after love. I would just go during and let it hang there with a bit of reverb or something. I don't know how you recorded it. I really liked, I'll hand it over to you guys in just a second, but I really like the fact that you went, "Open, blind man, open your beat eyes." So the scanning was surprising. I didn't expect that. And you also did that stand up and... fight.
Yeah.
So it kept me going there. Phil?
Well, it's, you know, this is an interesting question, and this is something I've always thought of when I've done my own music, because now you sent us the recording, which is a great recording. Now, was this a song that came out of a jam with a band?
No. This was all myself. I wrote all the material on this record. I was living out in the beaches in Toronto, and just for my own kind of meditation purposes, after a day's worth of construction, I would grab my guitar and just head down to the water and just start writing down there.
Oh, nice.
And just letting whatever came out.
Right.
Anybody drop coins in your?
You know what? Eventually, I started busking. I'm not going to lie. I moved further up towards the boardwalk and just started opening my case. And
why not? It's an interesting, because I mean the recording is really great because it's so atmospheric and it kind of builds in an interesting way. And it's interesting because when you're doing something that's recorded and it has that kind of energy, but then sort of pulling it into a solo with just a voice and a guitar, it's it's an interesting thing. Like, you know, like, do you have you thought about maybe rearranging it for a voice and the, you know, like the?
Actually, I released an EP, a 5-song EP, prior to this. While I was working on the recordings that made up the Freedom Sessions, I had all the guitars and vocals done, and then started to add instrumentation as I went along. But I got the opportunity to open up for Jeff Martin of the Tea Party and wanted something to release that day. So I quickly took 5 songs, and we got it mixed and mastered, and I pressed it on a limited edition 500 copy of like just guitar and vocals, and Blind Man was one of the tracks that was featured on that album.
This was on vinyl?
No, it was just on CD. Yeah. There were numbered copies, so there's only 500 of them floating around. I went through them fairly quickly.
Was it a different arrangement in terms of
a couple of the songs had a bit of an, you know, I cut little parts that would have like violin, you know, parts in there. Like, I would shrink it down just to kind of make it more bare bones.
Sounds like you have a suggestion for a live performance of this tune.
Well, it's an interesting, you know, it's... I've always been kind of questioning, because I've always played, I played a lot in punk bands, so we always played like 3-minute songs, which meant that if you had a set, you're playing 20 songs, you know, because these songs are so short. Mm. And then I've seen other bands where they would have a song and it would be like 5 or 6 verses. Mm. And so I'm always wondering, is it good to have a song that kind of goes long live so people get into it, or... is that too much and people get bored?
Were you losing interest in the song?
No, I wasn't losing interest in the song, because I think what carried it through for me was the message of the song, like the lyrics. Actually, it kind of, like, they're very clear and open
and delivered so well,
right?
Yeah. Even though the chords were repetitive,
but I mean, and that's kind of the point. I mean, you've almost set up this song to be sort of like a trance, right? And even the delivery of the lyric is very, it's open, it's very sparse, it's very long, like. Even your notes, your sung notes are very long. You know, like I was saying before the show, I started writing a song this week, a Christmas song, and I got through a verse and a chorus and a verse and a chorus, and I'm under 2 minutes. It's like, wham, bam, thank you, man. Like, in and out, right?
Slower.
So the same, I mean, you know, it's very spacious and long, which serves the tension as well, right? Everything in the song
Doomsday,
serves the tension.
I mean, it's about some really bad stuff happening, and I think what you're saying maybe is that the repetitiveness of the chords gives that sort of hopelessness, though, because it's just going on and on and on. And then what I'm suggesting, when you went to that little bridgey thing, or when you move to Love, it'd be nice to have something a little bit different there, and then some space, just to leave that. It's a powerful question. Where's Love?
Yeah.
Man.
We got a tweet in from Sharon. A long, long way from metal, not necessarily a bad thing.
No. If I can make a couple of suggestions, just for kind of rearranging this thing.
You have one minute.
Okay, it'd be very quick. Mm. When you did that little bridge interlude thing up the neck, I would love to see some lyric there, that the melody kind of shifts and does something. Yeah. And the lyric I would actually suggest is the, I get so tired of seeing all this, get so tired of living in this world. And then my second suggestion is, when you come back at the end of the song, tell me, Father, tell me, where's the love, do a chord substitute there, open it up, get away from the minor, go into a major chord, and really kind of open up the ending, which would be kind of a cool difference.
Neil, I think you have some information for our listening audience.
For those of you just joining us, you're listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil on CJRU 1280 AM in Toronto and streamed on songtalk.ca. Tonight, our guest is Andy Derego. Don't forget, we love to hear from you, so tweet in your thoughts to us at Song Talk Radio on Twitter or via email feedback@songtalk.ca. We'll share your thoughts in real time. And you can find links to all the products, books, and web services we mentioned on the show on our resources page at songtalk.ca. And coming up on Song Talk Radio in the coming weeks, we have, next week, November 21st, the return of award-winning songwriter Patrick Ballantyne.
Woo-hoo.
And he's going to dissect 2 of his favorite songs.
Yay.
Not his own. And on November 28th, we have veteran singer-songwriter and Song Studio faculty member Bill McKetrick joining us.
Awesome. Well, he's going to have great tales of Nashville.
Oh,
and apparently
cool.
He used to hang out with Taylor Swift when she was 10.
Oh,
like,
wow.
She was getting music input from Nashville people.
Including Bill.
Really early on, including Bill. So he'll have some stories for us.
Yeah, okay. That'll be great.
And if you're in the Toronto area, please join us at our next Songwriters Meetup. It's Sunday, November the 26th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Transact Club. It's free to join on meetup.com and free to attend. Stop by songtalk.ca for the link. And
Eric will be there. Eric Sorensen will be there.
Our good friend, is going to be home.
Yeah, and there's some really exciting things happening on that front, so stay tuned, because there's great stuff happening on the meetup front.
Changes are coming.
Changes are coming.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
So when you, back to you, Andy, when you made this decision to start writing this particular project, had you already been moving in this direction? It wasn't like a sudden thing, I think I'll just do acoustic guitar in my voice.
I was in a band called the Blues Emergency, and just fronting it as a vocalist. Mm-hmm. And I started writing these acoustic songs, and I had at the time about three of them, and I introduced them to the band, but it didn't fit for what we were doing. We're a lot louder band, and I just kind of wanted to take it in a bit of a different direction for the next record. Yeah. I guess it didn't work, so I just kind of put it on the back burner and just not knowing what to do with it. And then when that band kind of went under, I decided to start the Black Suit Devil project.
So I'm going to ask you a question that many of our listeners might be wondering. The singers out there that are singer-songwriters, as you are, the voice that you have there is very raspy. It's a certain style. It's got that kind of, it's like a struggling kind of bluesy thing, right? Is that a style you choose, or when you open your mouth to sing, is that what comes out?
When I sing in a lower kind of key, I get that rasp, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you can mimic it, obviously, and get a little more out of it, but I mean, you don't want to damage your vocal, too, so you do what's natural.
But in the past, have you sung, can you sing like, la 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 la?
Even throughout the record, I hit some higher pitch sounds, and my voice kind of goes up, you know, in different octaves, and kind of has more of a classic rock kind of tone to it. So
you're untrained in your voice as well, so you're just opening your mouth, feeling the song, whatever comes out, it's fine.
It's an instrument, right? Yeah. Like anything else, right? And I guess some have more control than others,
But it works for you, and you're singing perfectly. I don't know if you have perfect pitch, but you're right in pitch all the time. I had a friend who was in a rock band. She used to scream in pitch. You know, like Aretha Franklin, right?
Yeah.
It's a real art that...
Yes,
and it's right on the note.
I want to mention to Andy, like, now you're actually a full-time musician, and now you said one of the reasons why you wanted to go solo was because you can actually play like one night and get, you know, like you say, $180 or $200, and that's good if you don't have to split it with four other people.
Well, yeah, and when it comes to splitting with four or five people, it makes it a lot harder in a city like ours to kind of get by on just music alone.
Because you've been all, because now talk about a little bit about the tour, because you've really sort of arranged your own tour as well.
Yeah, I do all my bookings, you know, with the exception of you know, shows that kind of, you know, as your name gets out there, opportunities pop, kind of fall on your lap, I guess, so to speak. But for the most part, I'm booking all my shows, and there's a lot of the business that people don't see. You know, they come out to a show and they think that's all you do, and that's great. But I mean, it starts early morning at 7 in the morning, hitting that computer for hours on end, sometimes till your eyes are so sore you can't even look at the screen anymore.
Is this getting bookings, you mean?
Yeah, bookings, putting tours together, putting what have you, social media stuff. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to get a lot of help. My girlfriend helps me a lot with the social media aspects, so that kind of, that weighs off my shoulders a bit. And so, yeah, but there's a lot of unpaid hours that, you know, unless you're doing it full-time and, or, you know, you don't really know all that behind-the-scenes kind of...
Would you say 50% is business and 50% is music?
It might even be more. It depends on what stage you're at, right? If you're, you know, just released a record, then you'll probably be doing a lot more of the business end, trying to, you know, book the tours, book the shows, and what have you, then... When it slows down and you know, you're ready to write again, and perhaps the creative side.
Because you also mentioned that you play a lot sort of in Prince Edward County and do the winery thing.
Yeah, in the summertime, it's been good to me out there. There's a bit of a scene going out there. Just generally, I find the further out you go out of Toronto, the scene opens up a little more for a musician who's I guess trying to make it as a full time musician.
What kind of gigs are you doing in Prince Edward County? Wineries or restaurants?
Wineries, breweries, restaurants. I mean, there's venues out that way, and even further past that. I mean, like the East Coast has a great music scene out there, and there's no shortage of venues out that way.
Cool.
And the market is just like a little smaller along, you know, in between towns like places like Prince Edward County where you don't
have you ever
have...
played Wellington?
Yes, Wellington. Okay.
My dad nice lives there.
Town. It's a nice little town.
Dad lives there with his wife. And it's a sweet little town and right on the shores of Lake Ontario. And it's near the Sandbanks. Hmm. You remember the Sandbanks song?
I remember Sandbanks the park.
Okay, you've camped there.
So what's what is your songwriting habit? Are you like writing constantly every day? Because it's
not
kind of
every
a full timer.
But I'll pick up the guitar and generally just see what comes out. You know, some days nothing, but then there's moments where you just get that urge to play, and you pick up and magic happens, kind of. But I find every time I decide to sit down, okay, I'm going to try to write something, nothing comes out. And then it's those days where,
you're
in a rush to go somewhere or something, and you just pick up the guitar for 2 seconds when you shouldn't have, and then next thing you know, it's 3 hours later, and you got a song, you know.
I'm actually fascinated by this approach you have about, like I was saying in the first song, about the length of things. Like, everything is so long. It's kind of like a Radiohead record in that way. Like Tom York sang his notes, he would spend like a whole minute on one line, whatever the thing. Is that a
standard and stretched?
Very stretched out. Is that a conscious thing, or is that just kind of the way it came out?
When I'm writing, I hear a lot of like parts in my mind that what I want to do on record. So a lot of times, what I'm playing on acoustic guitar just as a solo might not make sense at the time, but I know exactly the sound that I want to go for when I hit the studio. As if you were to hear, for instance, Blind Man on those interludes and whatnot, there's a lot going on record. Uh-huh. But sometimes I'll switch it up on a live front and cut parts out and kind of change.
But I'm really asking about just the very fact of melody development. Like, when you're developing your melodies, is that a conscious thing to make them really stretched out? And
sometimes, not all the time. It varies from song to song.
Okay.
Sometimes, I'll have certain guitar parts, and I kind of fit vocal lines and kind of rearrange them to fit those parts, or vice versa. Sometimes I write a good bulk of lyrics and kind of rearrange some guitar parts around those.
Okay. So are you writing so do you actually go through and you write lyrics on your own? Or?
I do a lot of free writing. I'm actually working on a book of poems right now.
Oh.
And a lot of times these poems become songs also. Yeah. So I'll work that way too. It depends. Sometimes I'll be fiddling with a couple of chords and a lyric, just because of the way I'm feeling at the time, a lyric will pop in my mind and I might get like some catchy chorus or catchy verse, and a lot of times that will build into what that song becomes, maybe even the overall theme of the song.
Okay, let's hear a recording. Okay. You brought in a recording of a song called Fumble. And it was released when?
I just released it this past October 6th, the album came out.
Okay.
The Fumble was the first single. I released it a month prior, but the official release was October 6th for the album, The Freedom Sessions.
Okay. Well, let's have a listen then. This is Fumble by Andy Durego.
Roll me a joy. Thank you.
That was Fumble. Nice tune. Andy Drago. Thank you. Also known as, what's your project name again?
Black Suit Devil.
Where did that name come from? That was a cool
Devil.
Name.
Black Suit Devil was supposed to represent the corporate elite, the 1%. A lot of times these figures
like
will
black
be
suit zombie.
People
yes.
in black suits that kind of convey power and corporate control. That's where that kind of, which is a big theme, kind of like if you listen to the rest of the record, it's one of the predominant themes throughout the record.
Corporate
with the
greed.
Case. Yeah, injustice and you know.
So I want to say, and then I'll hand it over to Neil in just a second. But I wanted to say that I was really interested by the fact that the thing is called Fumble, and this thing in its 6/8 time, and its really weird rhythm section kept going kind of fumble stumble. We used to call it a stumble through when we would be in theater, right? Let's stumble through the reading here. And it felt like that the rhythm section was really giving that sort of loping, fumbling sort of thing, right? And that really fit really well. And the other thought I had was it'd be really good to listen to that record, Stone. Well, it's
just
to roll me
kids.
A joint.
I pressed it on vinyl just for those
purposes.
It's going
to be legal.
Just say no, kids.
Yeah, well, yeah, if you're, yeah. But what I'm saying is that it has a real, it. You know what reminded me of Phil was Creedence.
Yeah.
Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Really?
The instrumentation and the lead singer, really, it sounds strongly like them in the sense of that country, had a country feel with the slide, and then it had this loping sort of really lazy feel, right? The summer day, kicking back with a beer and a joint, I guess, and or a bottle of wine. And it was a great feel. I wanted to listen to it on headphones.
Well, to me, it makes me think of like... this would be, you'd hear this at like on a rainy night.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's got that kind of feel to it.
A rainy night? In Georgia or just anywhere?
Well anywhere, actually. Oh, okay. You know.
Is it cold or is it warm?
Well, that's kind of a warm thing. That's kind of, I thought, too.
Do you know much about CCR?
I'm a huge CCR fan. I've actually had the pleasure of seeing John Fogerty in England at the Royal Albert Hall.
Oh, wow.
And his first performance there since, I guess, CCR performed there in 75, if I got that year correct.
When was this that he performed solo?
This was a good question. I want to say 2001, 2002. So I took a trip
up
there.
Is he the lead singer, John Fogerty?
Yeah.
Yes.
He's got that great voice.
Yeah, yeah.
Neil, what do you think of this tune?
Yeah, I'm not really buying the CCR thing, but anyway.
I'm not selling it.
I mean, the CCR that I know, like they were geniuses at doing 3-minute pop songs, right? Like
listened to the whole album.
I guess I have listened to like the greatest hits, like the pop hits,
and
that sort of stuff. It's just like
album,
snappy.
The B cuts would be like
okay.
This
so these are the deep cuts you're talking about.
Deeper in the album.
It's right that song on. Throw a candle in the window. That one possibly compare it.
I have to go deeper.
I like
in
that
the CCR.
Loping 6/8 time though.
Yeah.
What did you like about the song?
Well, again, it's got an enormous amount of tension. Right, it returns to that repeating chord pattern. Everything like there's a lot of resolution in it, even though like I say tension, but it's actually got like it always comes back down to bass. I really like the very end. I don't know if it's the chorus. I guess the I fly away because you let it breathe a little bit more there. You let the guitar out for a moment, and then came right back into it. And it's interesting. You got in the first. time you repeat it, it's you blink, you fumble, my buzz kicks in, I fly away. And then the next time, it's we blinked, we fumbled. In time, the win will fade away.
Yeah.
So it's like going from the personal to the to the universal.
And the first half of the song is kind of looking at things in my kind of from my point of view. And then,
What I loved is in like to me the line that starts with all these lies. To me, it sounds like a chorus. You know, in a very rough kind of structure of the song.
Yeah. Well, but there's a melody lift there too.
Yeah,
right?
the melody lift.
So that helps.
But what I loved is because you have that, you know, you have this kind of approach to your to lyrics, you know, line, lots of space, long, the spice. Then you have all these rules we break, we follow. How those two lines kind of are really sort of different from all the rest. And then you set it up for the second time to go, time moves on, we blink, you blink, you fumble. And it's a really subtle little detail, but in the middle of the chorus. Mm-hmm. But that really separates it from the verse, which I thought was really, really tasty.
And yet you didn't separate it in chord.
In harmonically, yeah.
But it still
stayed the same, right?
But it still
works. But there was such a vocal lift in that. What is it?
Well,
and that was really heartfelt, right? Really from the
guts. It's interesting because you're able to get... You know, when I write songs, I don't think I would write something with this much space because that's not how my brain works.
There's no space in your brain?
No, there's just, you wouldn't believe the old crap that's in there.
Oh, yeah. Needed a clean.
But I think it's all because you also have like this amazing voice. So you actually, either consciously or unconsciously, or you're giving your space for your voice to be really highlighted in the songs because there's so much space around it. Mm-hmm. So that when you deliver each word and each line, it's really, it gives you a lot of room to sort of express it and make each one of those lines count.
Yes.
Yeah, and you differentiate, like one of the big things about songs, they say, is differentiating the chorus from the verse so that people know they've moved somewhere. And you don't do that with chord structure, you do that with vocal and melody. And passion, right? Which I think is very cool because I knew once you went into that, all these lies, I knew we were moving into something new.
And
then
the B part, and then
we came back to it again. Now, I would wager that if somebody's listened to your album, they will not know what the lyrics are, right? The articulation is not important to you, it's more the feel. And as I was reading the lyrics here, I thought, if I didn't have these. Because you toss away a lot of... I'm not saying it's wrong, but you toss away a lot of things. Let me give you an example.
Like I fly away, you just say fly away.
My buzz kicks in, there's no my, and I fly away. So it's not wrong because it's got this... Most people, they tell me, I'm a lyricist primarily. Most people say, I don't really listen to the lyrics.
Yeah.
But I suppose if someone gets hold of your lyrics on YouTube or whatever, they can have a look at them. But... Are you doing that on purpose? Like you don't care if they know what the lyric is?
Some are kind of like lost in like a low tone kind of rasp.
Yes.
And they're there if you isolate the vocals.
Mm-hmm.
there's about two tracks on the record that I have similar kind of...
But you made a decision that the articulating would not be the style you want, right?
Because
it's a lazy sort of... Not lazy, it's kind of laid back... It's bluesy, right?
With a set of headphones, a lot of times you pick up on certain ones.
But I think that's the difference between like you know theater. Like when you're doing like musical theater, each word is really really important because it moves the story on. So you can't leave words out because then people will go, "Why did he shoot her?"
But pop songs are
pop and rock songs, I mean, more recently, I think I'm just becoming more aware of it just by virtue of discussing it on this show week after week. In this song, Andy, you did consciously or subconsciously, you did decide that word wasn't as important as the other words, right? And you didn't give it the full sort of articulation and meatiness of the other words. And which I agree with Bruce, perfectly fine.
It has a style,
but it conveys a certain style. But I don't think it's going to be limited to theater. A lot of pop and rock songs, they do, you know, grab those last consonant sounds, grab the top and the end of sounds.
Yeah, Adele
very,
does,
very clearly.
And Lady Gaga does.
Yeah, of course, right?
And of course, in the old, you know, somebody singing the standards like Elvis Fitzgerald or Dinah Washington.
Yeah, very articulate.
But that was a style in that day that you're going to, you know, as a tribute to the songwriter, who wasn't you usually, and you were giving
also
respecting the songwriter.
I think by dropping the My Buzz Kicks In, you're dropping the my and the I, it kind of makes it seem a bit more intimate, like you're kind of almost like singing to yourself. Whereas if you say my buzz kicks in, I fly away, there is a kind of a bit of conceptual space between the singer and the listener, whereas you go buzz kicks in, fly away. Well, that's what you'd say to yourself.
I think the singer was stoned.
There seems to be a theme here. But
Well, no, it's a drug song. It started with
That's true.
I think the other point about that is, does the song really suffer for it?
No.
I think it adds to the atmosphere. I think it adds to the Phil's saying, like it opens up the space a little bit, and kind of it's kind of cool. And you don't lose necessarily the meaning of the song.
No, I think if you had a producer like me, who was saying, Andy, I can't hear that consonant on the third line. That again, you'd go, get out! Because it's not what you want. It's not a feel you want. Right?
Well, I definitely wasn't stoned on that recording, but it was just one of those...
Disclaimer.
Just so you know, kids.
I think that's actually one of the lines that if you isolate the vocal, it's actually there, but
it's
the way I deliver it. It's so subtle and almost like a whisper kind of.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'll listen to it on headphones because it sounds like... But I'll just have maybe a Diet Coke or something.
Yeah.
Because that's as strong as I get.
You know, it would be interesting if you're someone like me who writes, you know, kind of tight little pop songs, a good challenge would be to write something like this, which has so much space between the lines, because I think it would be really tough, and it would really force you into a different place. Yeah.
I find I can do it if I'm writing an instrumental piece. As soon as I put lyrics into the works, I need to get through the lyrics as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Well, Andy, it might be interesting for you if you come back in 6 months. Write us a tasty little 3-minute and 20-second pop song.
Bring us some metal. Bring us heavy
you
metal.
You probably got some. Right?
I do.
Mid tempo, up tempo, with a lyric that moves and a distinct chorus. That would be really interesting.
And
in contrast. Is there something on SoundCloud that we could listen to? Where are people going to get your stuff?
Blacksuitdevil.com right now.
Blacksuitdevil.com.
I got the album up on there. Samples of each song up there.
Okay.
It should be up on like all the streaming sites very shortly. I'm just in the works of putting that all together. But for now, BlackSuitDevil.com.
Well, that's great. And what's BlackSuitDevil.com?
.com, yeah.
Okay. So I hear the band, so it's all the time we have tonight on Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil. We'd like to thank our guest, Andy Durego.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for having me.
I like saying it with the Italian accent, even though he's Portuguese.
You think it's spaghetti sauce? What's
Durego.
Going on here?
Durego. Send us your impressions via Twitter at Song Talk Radio, email at feedback@songtalk.ca, Facebook, YouTube, Song Talk Radio. Stop by the good old site, songtalk.ca, and you can subscribe to the Song Talk Radio podcast on iTunes at songtalk.ca/iTunes. Don't forget to sign up for our free newsletter as well.
We have everything. We do.
We have product. You can buy it from our website, products, books, all kinds of cool things. And we also would like it if you review our iTunes, because that helps us. If you give it a positive review, that's what we would prefer. So resources on Song Talk Radio. If you're in the Toronto area, reminder, it's coming up soon, November the 26th. It's a Sunday from 1 to 4 at the Transact Club on Brunswick. It's free to join on meetup.com and free to attend. Stop by songtalk.ca/meetup for all the juicy details. We'd like to thank, of course, CJRU 1280 AM, the wonderful Ryerson radio station, Michael Newton, technical director. Thanks also to Vanessa Vreeland in the other room there. She's handling the social media channels. And thank you to Anthony, our new tech. Great job tonight, Anthony.
Thank you, Anthony.
And most of all, a big virtual hug to all of you, our listeners, wherever you are. If you're on Twitter, you can follow Neil at
NeilMody_.com.
Phil at
the Phil Emery.
Vanessa at Sunny_Vanessa. Okay, we're doing it for
we all know it.
Andy on Twitter?
Twitter.com/BlackSuitDevil.
BlackSuitDevil. And me at Bruce Harrett. Please stop by the website, songtalk.ca, browse past shows, find out how you can be a guest on our show. Bye for now.
Good night, everyone.
Keep on writing.